Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, the podcast. I am Chet Haas from the Android UI Toolkit team.
And I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team. And where's our guest?
Okay, so point one, I want to point out that we had another guest blow us off, but I think more importantly, it was the same guest. So we went out of our way to say, you know what, bygones be bygones. We will magnanimously forgive you for having food poisoning and not showing up for the last show. But, you know, we'd like you to come to another show. And the person said, great, committed to it. And then simply didn't make it today because, you know, some conflict.
I think we have to face facts.
It's you, not me?
Yeah. This is just, you know, coming up with excuses each time. It's something he really doesn't want to do.
I think so. I mean, food poisoning, really. And then
I wish I could make it, but I have to wash my hair that day.
Unbelievable. I mean, just the fact that, like, I didn't happen to actually add him to the invite and he didn't know when it was and he got booked into another meeting. I don't think that's a fair excuse.
All right. So, well, what do we do instead?
Let's talk. Turns out, so last time we did this, we said, okay, well, we don't have a guest, but we got some sort of pent up, you know, energy and anger that we have to get out there about all these awesome tools that we have. So we'll chat about tools and then we'll run out of steam and we'll be done with that. And we got about a third of the way through what we thought we were going to talk about that day. So today we could do that, but we could also talk about Google I/O that just happened when we're recording this. It was just last week. Or there's this series of articles that are coming out that we could talk about instead. So it turns out we have a bunch of stuff to talk about in the likely event that we get blown off by the same guest over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So why don't we do that?
Let's start with I/O.
Okay, yeah, so we'll blow off the tools. We'll push those off to another time because they will always be there.
If I had to summarize I/O, I would say tools. I mean, you know, we announced Android Studio 1.3 preview.
Awesome.
By now, we've already shipped preview 2 to fix a couple of bugs. So, you know, that was clearly the highlight of the keynote. Wouldn't you agree?
It was certainly the highlight of the session that I went to called What's New in Android Tools.
Yeah.
Okay, so hit some of the highlights there.
Well, I think the biggest news and the one that actually was included in the keynote is that we've added C and C++ support. So that's really, really important for people who do Android NDK development. And it was one of those things that, you know, you really didn't have in Android Studio. So when you were using Eclipse, you had the C support there. And so now you can, if you prefer Android Studio, you can actually do that as well. You can do all your C and C++ support. And it's basically based on IntelliJ C-Lion product, which is very, very good, I think, you know. The editing support they have compares really well to anything else out there. So that's kind of an exciting too. This isn't just, hey, we hacked together some basic syntax highlighting. You can have a little bit of preliminary support in the editor. No, this is basically full-blown C and C++ support with refactoring and code completion and all the stuff you want. So that's pretty exciting.
So how does it compare to the IDE or the editing support that we have for writing Java in Android Studio?
It's a lot of the same features. Right. So but not only that. So they have, of course, the basic stuff like the rename, refactoring, find usages, that stuff. But they also have some C++ specific stuff. For example, you know, extracting typedefs and extracting to macros. And there's, you know, a number of C and C++ specific inspections and intentions. Right. So you can, for example, if you're looking at a function declaration, you can say, you know, create a prototype declaration for this. And, you know, there's actions for navigating between header files and, you know, the actual implementations and things like that. So it's really, really good.
So, and the purpose of the native editor, specifically Android Studio shipping with it, is for NDK.
That's right. So typically, you know, the most people who use this are people who are writing games. And so if you have a game, especially if it's cross-platform, you know, you want to be able to edit it and debug it, right? So we have a debugger, both one for GDB and one for LLDB. And so you can actually step through the code on a device and see what's happening. And with all the cool features that you have for the Java debugger. So the new feature we have in Android Studio 1.2 from IntelliJ 14, the one where it actually shows all the expressions, overlay the source editor that works in the native debugger as well. So it's pretty cool.
So I'm curious about the debugging support because I haven't actually tried this beast out yet. It's been a while since I've edited native code. I was looking forward to this greatly. But is it possible to actually debug on both sides of the curtain? So can you be debugging in the
Android
plugin?
Not at the same
time.
Now, that's clearly that's a very good feature request, Chet. I'll try to think of that later.
I'm sure it's nothing that anybody ever thought of. But certainly, if you're not in the NDK world, but if you're in the world of, you know, writing, having to use JNI code, then it's kind of nice to be able to see what's going on both sides. This is obviously crucial for us on the framework side, right?
With the current version, you'll have to sort of decide which side you want to be on of the curtain, right? So if you decide that you have a bug in the C++ side, you will create a native run config and you'll set breakpoints in the C code and run that way. If you want to look at the Java code, use the traditional debugger. It certainly would be very nice if we could sort of create a composite stack trace, right, where you have some frame from art, and then you jump right into the native. That would be great, but that, we don't have that.
Actually, didn't I see in your demo that you can actually see the stack trace, though? Weren't you unrolling some amount of the Java stack trace from native?
I didn't actually demo the debugger for native. What I showed was this other amazing feature, if I don't say so myself, for the Java debugger, where we use all the static analysis we have in the editor to overlay values in the Java debugger. So the example I had is, well, let's say you have a field, and that field happens to actually correspond to an RGB triple, right? Well, the debugger doesn't know that this actually is an RGB triple. How would it? Well, in the editor, we often know. We can sort of do inference and figure out, well, this field corresponds to a color annotation. In that case, we will actually render it as a color. And we do this not just for colors, but for things like resources. So we can show you that this magic int actually corresponds to r.string.foo. Or in the case of typedef annotations, we can show you that this crazy number actually corresponds to these seven constants all ordered together. So that's a new feature we have in 1.3 as well, where we perform static analysis and use that in the debugger to sort of enrich the display of primitive ints.
So you actually do syntax highlighting with the colors that people are setting with their set color calls, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it syntax highlighting, but yes, we definitely show a little color swatch in line in the debugger.
No, I think you should do syntax highlighting. I think you should just have like random colors sprinkled throughout some of the method calls depending on whether they're affecting the color. I think that's a really good idea.
That is a good idea. I'll definitely file that bug in a special place. So let's see. Other things we added. We previewed some new UI tools that are coming in upcoming releases, so a new theme editor and a new layout editor. And we also showed data binding. So that's something. Whoa. I guess you could – actually, you did talk about it, I.O.
Very, very briefly. So there was another – I think perhaps the best session that I went to, just because I had the best seat for it, was What's New in Android. Where we talked about entirely too many new features in the platform. Dan Sandler and I, Dan was the other speaker, we were getting all the information together and compiling all the slides, and then the day before we realized we had probably three times as much material as we could actually cover in that tiny little 40-minute time slot. So we cut out about half of it, and then we put ourselves on the 1.5 speed. Talked really, really fast to try to get through it all. But one of the things that suffered was data binding. What I wanted to do was walk through a complete example showing, you know, how you have a simple example where you've got some image views and text to display based on some, you know, data that you're importing, connecting to these UI widgets. Here's how you would do it in, you know, traditional code. At runtime, you have these listeners sending information around, calling the setters. And then here's how you would do it with data binding, just showing it, that it's A, way more terse, and B, allows you the separation of concerns where you can say declaratively, here's where I want the UI elements to get their data from. And then it just takes care of it. It pre-processes all that stuff. At the end of the day, I didn't have time to walk through that whole example. So we simply said, well, you've got this demo. It can do the following. Here's what data binding would look like where it can connect these elements together. Go check out their sandbox talk. The hope is that sandbox talk also gets turned into a dev byte or some sort of longer video that gets shared.
Yeah, because that's not actually the
sandbox talks were not recorded.
Right.
But the intention is to take a lot of that material and actually make videos out of them so that we can have the material out there for the people that didn't happen to make it to the event.
The talk that you did talk about, the What's New in Android Android and What's New in Android Developer Tools, those are both available. So if you're not sick of Chet's voice or my voice, you can actually get those on YouTube. But all the box talks, I guess we will have to get those re-recorded as dev bytes and put them out there.
Yeah, and that certainly is the intention. It probably depends on the material and the speaker and the relevance and all that. But certainly things like the data binding feature. There was also a talk that I missed from Adam and Yeet from the Toolkit team on Android app architecture that I think would be very interesting because there are a couple of people very qualified to address that topic. So it would be great if we could actually create videos around those and send those out this summer. We'll see if we can get to that. We have some bugs to fix.
Might also be, you know, a good topic for a podcast. I think data binding would warrant.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I got
so
those
we'll
people
here
on
now
this.
Commit to doing that.
We have future guests that are totally willing to blow us off
at
some other time. Yep. So that'll happen.
Okay. So data binding support is also one thing I demoed, but again, I dedicated 90 seconds to it, which can't do it justice. But it was one of those, just give people the flavor of what we can do in the tools in terms of automatically offering code completion, highlighting, and so forth. And it really does simplify the code quite a bit.
That is certainly the hope.
All right. So the last few things that we showed in Android Studio 1.3 were
annotations.
Well, annotations, you know, which I could talk about at length, but I won't. But we showed a bunch of new performance tools. So we have the allocation tracker with the fancy charting and all that stuff, and the heap analyzer.
I want to know more about that.
Yeah. So you can basically point to any kind of heap dump. So you can grab a heap dump very easily, right? In the Android window, which is basically like the old DDMS view, there's a button saying grab a heap dump. And when you do that...
More importantly, there's a button that looks like either a trash can or an old disk array with a red arrow or a stop sign on top of it.
Yeah, we
it's
probably could benefit
icon.
from some updated icons. I think we just used the ones we had before. We need to revisit those.
Yeah.
So you click, you know, the trash icon to delete your device. No. To grab a heap dump, and that generates a heap dump on the device, which it then pulls down and stores locally in your captures view. And there you have all the heap dumps you've recorded in the past, and you can click on it to open it in this heap dumper, heap viewer. And there you can sort of sort by retained size. So the retained size is basically the size of this object plus all the objects that it's dominating, meaning objects that if you were to remove this, they can also be removed, right? So you're sort of the main remaining reference to it, right? So what you want to focus on is finding, you know, the largest objects in terms of their retained size. And we can sort by that. And then you find your object, you start looking at all the instances in the heap of that object. And you want to make sure that they're there for a good reason. So you can do that through the reference tree where you can see, well, who's pointing to this? And if you see, oh, yeah, well, this object's being pointed to by that activity, and I do expect one of those to be in memory, so that one's good. Or you might find, what? I'm not supposed to have 10,000 copies of this object. Why is it there? And you can walk the reference chain back up to the garbage collection route to see who's holding on to it. And typically, you'll find a static field. Someone decided to make an instance and then a static field, and that's, you know, a very common way to...
Let the record show that I'm raising my hand as being guilty of that at times in my past.
Yeah. So anyway, so there were performance tools, and we also had some stuff for, integrating Google services like analytics and so forth and new SDK manager. And lots of good stuff. So... I think that was the main thing for tools.
Yep. So go check out that YouTube video. Play it at double time. What do you think? Well, it depends on whether you or when Jay is talking, you can play it at double time. When Tor is talking, you want to slow it down a little
bit. I think you probably want to go frame by frame. That's how I like to enjoy it.
Lovingly frame by frame.
Yes. There's actually a lot of stuff happening. So what about Android M? You shipped a preview? Anything?
We did ship a preview. So you can go download. Obviously, you would want the tool, and the preview SDK is available along with that. And there's a site where you can submit bugs, because what we really want to do is get your feedback. The preview release this year is working a little bit differently than it did last time around. So last time around was basically the first time we were doing this. We were sort of honing the process, shall we say. This time, the intention is to actually ship a couple more preview releases. So we're putting the bits out there now, or starting last week. We expect developers to get it, to play with it, to submit bugs on the preview site, and then we'll iterate and we'll drop another preview release. Again, developers can get that, play around with it, submit more feedback. We have a little bit of time to operate on that, and then another preview release. And then sometime after that, we actually finish it up and ship M.
Cool. And what are your top five personal favorites in Android M?
Data binding. You know what? There was so much stuff in there that I'm having a hard time paging it in. I would have to actually look at the talk and go, oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so permissions. This is huge. People have been asking about this for years, and there's actually a separate session. So you can see this very, very briefly in the talk that Dan and I did, but more importantly, there's a session by Ben Poise that should be on YouTube as well. No, it is. I've seen it there. Go watch that. This is the idea that when your app requests a permission, you don't have to request these, you know, huge buckets that the user has to sign up for whenever they install your app, regardless of whether they actually use that thing or not. So let's say like one corner case of your app wants to, get information about contacts because it wants to populate a field or whatever. This is an example that I heard Dan Liu talking about where that may be a permission that some users may find scary, but in the context of when you ask for it, it's not scary at all. So the idea is that you can ask for these permissions granularly, and when the app actually needs that specific permission, if this is the first time that the user is granting access to it, then you would request the permission, and the user can decide whether or not to actually allow that.
Right. So I would think, for example, that a microphone permission, you kind of don't expect apps to surreptitiously listen to you, right? But it might be that if you click on, like, support, and it says now dialing customer support to help you with this feature, then you would understand it saying, hey, this would like to have your microphone
right
now. And so that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So at that time, you ask for the permission. The user understands more clearly why you need that permission and may choose to give you that permission at that time. If they do not give you the permission, then obviously you don't have access to the functionality that requires that permission. And then your app needs to do the right thing there.
So what's the impact for developers?
It depends on whether you are a new app or existing app. Existing app didn't have, you know, the API to interact more particularly with this. So you're going to get the same permissions that you always had. The only tweak on that, so your app is going to continue to run as it did before. The only tweak is that the user now has the ability to go into settings and disable permissions for apps specifically. So your app, when it goes to request, goes to access the capabilities of the device that require that permission, is going to receive an exception back if the user has disabled that, and your app should already be handling exceptions anyway. So this is something that's, you know, apps are going to have to deal with, and that is the mechanism that they deal with it if the app is already existing. For new apps, now you have the ability, in fact, the necessity of actually asking for these runtime permissions instead of, you know, asking for everything up front. You probably want to ask for the core functionality that it's always going to need, and then the other stuff as it comes up. And I would say go check out Ben's talk for the specific details on, you know, the APIs and the strategies for approaching this.
Cool.
So can I just leave it at those three? Because otherwise I have to go look at my talk and say, what did we talk about?
Well, so there's only three things you liked out of the five. I understand.
Did I say data binding? Data binding is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and the nice thing about data binding to mention is that that is not really an Android M feature, right? It works. You can use data binding today, and it'll support older versions, because what happens with data binding is it's actually tied into the Gradle plugin where it does code generation at build time. So you get to sort of do this data binding, but there's no performance penalty, and it'll work on older versions of Android as well. So there's really kind of no downside.
Yeah, there's a little library component which works on older releases, but most of the functionality is actually in the tooling. This is a key element of why it's so darn cool, is that we're not doing anything at runtime like you might expect, like, you know, using reflection to detect setters and getters. None of that's going on.
It really looks like it would, because if you look in a layout file, you see this, like, the expression language, right? So you see the syntax, and it really gives you the impression of, hey, this is like JavaScript. You know, we have a little on-click handler, which is going to be executed, and it's going to run this code there. No, that's not what happens. That gets compiled.
Yeah, so it gets pre-processed into something that is not that expression there. That, you know, then creates the listeners and the property propagation and the setters and getters that it needs to actually do its job at runtime very efficiently.
Yeah. No, I think we should probably talk to some people about that in
we
a future
should.
Episode.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else you want to say about I.O.?
It happened. There was a good, what was the last session? Something called Speechless. That was fun. But since it wasn't recorded, we probably shouldn't go on at length about it. But always something fun to do a little improv comedy at a conference when everybody's up for a break.
Yes. Yeah. Have you caught up on your sleep yet?
I did over the weekend, barely.
Yeah,
yes.
Same here. All right. Let's talk about the new Android recommendations document from the, well, I guess you could say it's from the framework team, right? So this is a set of articles that you're publishing on Medium?
Yes. Actually, I would say it's from the platform team. So it started with a question internally. A developer on an app team internally said, so we occasionally get recommendations from the framework team, or more particularly, they get, you know, pointed answers when they will say, well, they're taking this particular approach. It'll come out in some, you know, social media internally or whatever. And then somebody from the framework team will say, don't do that.
Right, because so you have a new developer from the rest of Google coming into some Android team saying, I am going to follow Google's code style, and here we go. Nice, clean abstractions with enums, and we're going to use Squava, and everything's great. And then then what happens?
And then they run into some of the problems that we're talking about in this series of articles. In particular, it's not just somebody following Google's coding conventions or whatever, but there are a lot of developers here and in the real world that come from a background of using Java for server development, for web services, for even desktop development, where you kind of have virtually unlimited resources at your disposal. And certain abstractions and patterns and ways of going about your life and middleware libraries that people use, like you sort of take these on as your daily life as a Java programmer. And the intention here is to point out that using the Java programming language to write Android programs is really not like using the Java programming language to write web services. There are different things that you have to keep in mind because we're on constrained devices.
Right. So even if something is, it's 0.2 seconds if you do it the slow way and 0.1 seconds if you do it the fast way, that doesn't matter on the desktop. But on a device, you burned fewer cycles. So you saved battery. And saving battery is apparently a good thing.
Apparently. And not just, so it's not just like the speed with which you can do it, but it's did you miss a frame during the animation? Are you burning more of the battery? Are you contributing to the problem in the overall device of everybody burning a little bit more battery and now the user has half the battery life that they used to? Or it's running hot all the time, or your service running in the background is causing performance problems for the activity running in the foreground. It's everything sort of working together, or more particularly working against each other, that tends to cause problems in these constrained environments.
Right. So these questions would come up on internal Google Plus or whatever.
Yeah. And then they'd get very pointed answer from the framework team. So then a question was asked more recently at a forum where we got together with framework folks and app teams. And this person said, okay, so where are these best practices that we can look at? Where is the document? Where is the video? Where is the course that I can take that will tell me everything that the framework team wants me to know besides just pointed answers when we're obviously doing the wrong thing? And the answer was, oh, we don't have that. What we have is the knowledge that, we all sort of share in this common brain that we have over on the platform team. Wouldn't it be nice if we actually tried to collect some of that information together so that we could share it out in a more generally useful way instead of these, anecdotal questions and answers that come up? So then that started the need for this article, as I saw it, this collection, this reference that you could go to saying, okay, here's all the reasons why this actually matters, and then here are the various rules that we've come up with, and this is going to be, a growing list over time, but surely we can come out with some useful list in the meantime. So this was...
So I know that in a previous company I worked at, when they had a framework that they came up with and they gathered all the best practices, some of the senior people there decided to make a book, and it's a bestseller. So how come you're a published author? How come you didn't decide to do a book on this and, go that route instead of just giving it away for free?
Because I'm a published author, I didn't go that
That's
route.
Right. You're like, I'm not going to make it.
I know exactly. I've done, five books now, two of them sort of full-on real publisher, serious programming books. I know exactly how much time goes into one of these projects. It's not something, this is not my real job, right? My real job is coding and leading this team and, doing all of that stuff. And this writing an article and giving talk stuff is stuff that I do on the side. At the point where that became, a project that I did at work, I probably need to find a new job here because I don't have that much time. So then it ends up becoming all of your weekends and evenings. And in the meantime, what I really want is the information to get out there.
Yep.
And it's important to point out that, not only is this a platform document, it's not, even from the framework team, and it's certainly not from me. So I feel more like I'm the medium here. I'm the channel, the conduit through which the information is flowing. So I set up the basic structure of the document. I created a bunch of the context, the sort of whys, and I put down the rules that I was most familiar with, specifically in the UI and some of the performance area, and wrote about some of the tools. And then I kind of put some of the structure around the rest of the document. And then I reached out to the framework team and said, okay, here's this new thing, this new channel that we have to get the information out that we all know and love. Could some people help out? And I had, heavy hitters like, Diane Hackborn and Jeff Brown kicking in and Chris Craik with some performance stuff and Adam Powell was chiming in and, you know, people from across the Framework team sort of sent in all this information. We debated it internally, sort of honed what we could down into the essence of these really concrete rules. There's actually a lot more information. It's like the talk that I gave with Dan. There was so much more information that was in the total document as it started. But we wanted the document to be very clear and concise and very rule-based. We didn't want to say, oh, you might consider doing something like the following. Like, this is not a guide that you go to for tips about, you know, how to write, you know, better Android apps. These are the rules that you really need to understand to write decent Android apps.
And this is like when you're doing code reviews, it's very easy to say, oh, don't do this.
Yeah.
Refer to item 57 in the blah, blah, blah guide.
Yeah, that's the intention. There are some areas, there's nuances to all of this, and I'll clarify that in a minute. Anyway, so I reached out to the framework team. We sort of refined this thing. And then I reached out to the runtime team because a lot of the stuff really revolves around memory and the behavior of the runtime, right? The ART runtime, the Dalvik runtime before that, certainly the garbage collector. So much of the performance situations and the battery life and all these issues are driven by how fast the runtime is, how much work it has to do, how fast we can allocate and collect the objects. So I reached out to them to sanity check the information that we were saying about their system that they know and love, and to get more tips and rules and guidance from them. And then I also got some people from the apps teams kicking in. So there's really a large collection of people that actually contributed information to this overall document. So it's in no way my thing. Instead, I'm sort of the person that actually managed to put it together and then publish it. So then we put this out internally. And again, there were some iterations internally, some more information coming from people internally as they used it. And then when we were happy with that, then I broke it up into the chapters that you now see on Medium. There was some Google-specific stuff in it, just because there will be with any internal document. But that was a very small minority of the information in it. So I stripped that stuff out, and now it's out there as Medium articles.
Cool. What's the feedback so far?
It's pretty good so far. There's certainly a lot of people reading it. There's many, many people viewing it. And there's even a lot of people that have actually read the whole thing. I love the stats.
I know that, I think it was a bank a while back that in their like fifth page of terms and conditions would put like the first 50 people to read this gets $25 or something. You know, did you try any kind of thing like that to see if you get people getting all the way through?
I'm hoping that Android developers are motivated to read it because they want to make their apps better. Call me a fool.
Yeah. You're a fool.
Thank you. But we're putting the information out there. They can choose to use it.
I'm sure it's actually really, really good. I think there's been really a need for this, right, to have sort of semi-official, given that it's on your personal YouTube account. But, at least some, semi-official documentation of some of these issues, right? Because it's not really clear what the recommended practice is.
Yeah, what I really wanted was the ability to point somewhere and say, please go read that and understand that thing. Because we can create videos around some of these things, you know, tutorials about, you know, taking this particular approach or, you know, not using that particular collection class or whatever, but they end up being sort of scattershot information that's spread all
over.
You're
not going to do a dev bite on don't use enums, right? But it could be good to have it in a certain place and explain why.
Right. Or if we do, like I could actually see a lot of the information that's in this document being broken up into smaller bits and pieces to understand, to explain more completely some of the ideas. So, for example, I really wanted this information to get out there sooner rather than later. So we could have taken a lot more time. We could have actually written a book around it or written a very complete thing that has examples and code and analysis in there and numerical data and all that stuff.
But the best books are the short ones, like, you know, the Kernighan and Ritchie C book, it's short.
Right.
That's perfect.
So I could see the longer information getting out there eventually. So someone could take that idea of, avoid enums when you can, and they could go create something around that and actually give the numbers behind it and some examples of, how to use them or not use them or whatever. That tutorial would be great. But at the end of the day, I want that tutorial to then point to this document and say, for other tips, go read this whole document that explains the context of everything.
Have you numbered or named the rules so that they're easy to refer to?
I haven't. It didn't get quite crisp enough for my taste to do that. I feel like it should be a living document. If we come up with, more rules in the networking area, I feel like we should be able to add them.
Yep.
And I don't want to, screw up a numbering scheme by going in and adding something in the middle. But also, like,
well, that's
most...
why you need dots. You know, you don't change the numbers; you just keep dotting.
Or, you know, network number 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
We could do that. Most of the rules, and certainly my intention was to have all of the rules along the lines of avoid this, don't do this, do this thing. Some of the rules, like there is this nuance. I mentioned this before. Most of the rules, like this is really the thing that you need to do or need to not do most of the time. But, you know, well, it depends on your situation. So the typical one that always comes up in the context of Android is, you know, avoid enums, right? So from the framework perspective, certainly, like when you're writing a library, we do not use enums anywhere because A, they take up more space. B, they cause more runtime overhead accessing the values that they need to have.
There's an alternative that
C,
the tools
an
give
easy
you.
Alternative. Certainly with some of the new annotations, some of the existing annotations out there, there's a way to get the type safety that you're after without the extra memory resources that are going to be taken up by this extra data structure. And it sounds silly, again, to people coming from the traditional Java programming language world, but that's exactly why we wrote the document, because it's not obvious to people coming from that context, but then we explain why this actually matters, right? But if you use enums in a class inside your application because you found it more convenient when you accessed, you know, constants in that class, go for it. I don't really care. When it impacts your activity is going to be when you use a library that uses enums all over the place, and now you're dragging in all of this stuff and bloating your memory for the convenience of using this data structure that had a much slimmer data structure that you could have been using instead. Or when you love enums so much that you spread them throughout your code. So it's not in that one class. It's actually everywhere in all of your classes. That's when it becomes a problem. So we say the rule, but the nuance is, you know, your mileage may vary depending on your situation. Right. So there, most of the rules are crisp, you know, like avoid enums, you know, don't whatever, don't allocate in your onDraw method. Right. We can boil down most of them. Some of them are more like, you know, understand the implications of this. And then we sort of describe things. And when you do that kind of language, because it's so nuanced, then it's a little bit hard to say, you know, rule 72, understand why JNI is bad, or, you know, whatever the rule is.
Well, I know that. For enums in particular, there were a bunch of discussions with people who weren't from Android and basically recommending programmer productivity and so forth.
Yes.
Has this document being published externally triggered any flame wars so far?
I saw some commentary on Reddit about, you know, that people will take exception to some of this stuff. And I understand that, and it's valid to debate and, again, come up with the right decision for your application. What we can do on the platform side is tell you why it can create bad activities, right? Why it can cause problems when you're writing Android applications. You can take that into account and decide whether it's actually going to affect your particular application, but it's good for you to understand why we're saying this.
Okay. Was there anything in the document that when you saw other members contribute it, you were surprised? Was there anything that you didn't know? Or at least are there things that you think will be a surprise to anyone else reading this?
Well, there's certainly a lot of new information in there that I did not generate, nor do I inherently, you know, understand or use on my own. So, for instance, there's discussions about databases and storage stuff, or, you know, services or things about Android applications, which I, as an Android animation developer on the toolkit team, don't actually use, right? So I didn't have the information to contribute to those discussions. It wasn't a surprise, but it was certainly information that I did not know, and I'm glad that, you know, people like Diane could kick in stuff like that, because they can do that far more effectively than I could. One of the surprises that I had going out was I actually expected much more contention about it internally than I got, because we are talking about things that traditional Java language developers may take exception with. And so we sort of honed this document in the framework team and said, okay, here's everything that we know and believe, and I expect there to be a lot of pushback, and then I want to iterate toward the, you know, the right solution that is that makes everybody feel comfortable. So I reached out to the runtime team, and in fact, they were quite on board with most of the things that we'd had in there. They sort of nuanced some of the information about collections, and they certainly added some more very helpful information. But there wasn't actually anybody coming back and saying, no, you're wrong, this is a bad thing to be telling developers. I think there's a great understanding in the platform team and also the apps teams that we were dealing with internally that also understand these performance concerns. that this really is important information when you are developing for these constrained environments. So that was the surprise. It was a happy surprise of, oh, wait, there's not a huge debate about this stuff. From the people that actually understand what's going on in this constrained environment, there's overall great agreement on what these rules are and why they need to exist.
Do you think any of these could be turned into lint rules?
Well,
I guess we should just go through the
document. With some of them. Yeah.
Some of them for sure, yeah.
Yeah. I would actually ask the guy on the tools team that develops lint, because he'd probably have a better idea of what's possible.
Yeah, I'll make a note of that. So are there any of these rules that you want to talk about here? So, or do you think you just want to basically ask people to go read it?
I mainly want to ask people to go read it. It's when I wrote it internally, it was like, you know, a Google Drive document, which means, you know, the font is like 2-point font and everything's really closely spaced. And it was like 36 pages long. Right, it's a huge document when you put it all together. We broke it into nine chapters that are coming out as Medium articles. They're not all out there yet, but they will be by the time this podcast actually goes live.
And are you doing sort of call-outs of highlighted things, like with nice graphics on the left, like a magazine layout? Or
no, unfortunately. So I have started writing for Medium in the last year because I really like it as a writing platform. I've started putting out I wrote a serious article about presenting about a year ago because I happen to have a lot of opinions about giving effective presentations. And then since then, I've written a lot of comedy or satire articles. And I really enjoy writing on the site because I think it makes any text look good. It's got a really nice font and spacing. It's got really nice flow around images, an easy way to incorporate full bleed images, you know, banner images or images off to the left.
What about code snippets? Does it do a good job with that?
It actually will format code, very, very simple formatting of code as well. So there's a way you can do that. So I wouldn't use it for like serious technical writing necessarily, but it's certainly good enough for the little snippets of code that I'm putting into articles like this or other Android articles that I might write. But one of the really nice things about it is it does have this like WYSIWYG editor where you can incorporate these images that you flow around. And again, I want this information to get out there. Like I could go through all my old camera files and I could look for funny images to incorporate in there and I could make this, you know, beautiful experience. But what I really want is a reference book to get out there for people. And so I'm really not taking advantage of Medium. I'm using like headline number 2 and normal text, and that is it. I do some italicized text and a little bit of code. And that's it. Like it's some of the driest material that Medium has ever had hit its site. But
probably going to be one of their most read, at least among tech stuff.
Certainly, the hits are getting quite up there. It was a little depressing in the first couple of days to see that, you know, thousands of people had read the introduction, which is all of 4 paragraphs long, and not quite as many had made it to actually chapter 1, which I think is the most important chapter in the entire book. But now a week in. Actually, more people have read chapter 1, so it's a good sign. And then
maybe they bookmark it. You know, that's the thing I was trying to do with I.O. talks that I didn't have a chance to go to. I put them in my watch later list.
Yeah.
So I've seen the first 5 seconds,
right.
And it wasn't that I found it off-putting. It was more that, okay, well, when I get time, I'll definitely do this.
I think so. So I talked about this before. Like I find the stats on Medium fascinating when I look at my articles. So I wrote this presenting article a year ago, and that also is really huge. It turns out I have a habit of writing entirely too many words. It's, you know, most articles on Medium are like 3-minute read, 5-minute read, 2-minute read, 6-minute read. It was like a 45-minute read. And so I got, I think there's like 19,000 views on it, but more like 2,000 reads, which means a lot of people came there and were excited about the topic, and then they saw how long it was, and they couldn't quite make it all the way through.
And that's why you learned, and instead of doing one,
yeah,
developing for Android, you split it into small, digestible chunks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's probably not a bad idea.
Yeah, break it up into these, you know, nice little tangible buckets. Like, it was already broken up into those sections in the overall document anyway, so I'm just publishing those as chapters. And I'm doing, you know, one in a day to sort of make it a little bit more manageable. And I don't expect that, you know, these people are going to land there and go, I want to consume all this material now. Some of those chapters, like the memory and the performance chapters, are a bit long and they're fairly deep. So I understand that people may come back. What I really want is for the document, for all these chapters to exist for people to be able to come back to later when they need it.
Have you thought of what you're going to do when the material evolves? Like, are you going to have an addendum, or are you going to just edit in place and let people guess what the changes were? Or
what an excellent question. I have not thought about that. I do expect that we will have other rules that come up in the future that we would want to add. I suppose if they are significant ones, then I would simply add it to the document and I would post about it and encourage people to check out the change.
Okay.
That's a reasonable way to do it. And the article lives on Medium, again, for expediency, because, again, I wanted it to get out there now. So maybe eventually it will live in a more permanent and more official Android-y place. I have no idea. But I didn't want that to get held up by, well, everybody at Google is really busy with I.O. and, you know, editors are going to get to it in a while. Like, I would much rather get it out there sooner. So we have this Google Developers channel on Medium where we pushed it instead. So it's sort of semi-official. And in the meantime, it lives on a site which makes things pleasant to read, and I'm happy with that.
All right.
Right.
I guess there is really time for us to get into it. That would probably be another 3 hours. Knowing the rate at which we get through material on this podcast, it would be a marathon.
Yeah, it would certainly take a while if we went into any of the rules in particular. I mean, I was tempted to go into some of the stuff in the context chapter, just the sort of overview, because to me, that's the most important. Like, if you remember any specific rule, like when you encounter that, you know, data structure, when you are, you know, weighing whether you should use a particular collections class, maybe you'll remember that there was something in the doc about it and you can go back and reference it. What I really want people to read, first of all, is that context chapter. It's the context of mobile development. And it basically outlines why the rules matter. So even if you, you know, read the rest of it right now or you don't read the rest of it right now, you come back to it later and you can, you know, imbibe the rules one by one. But please understand why we're saying this stuff. This is not just, you know, framework team doing knee-jerk, don't use enums because they take up more bytes. Like, no. This is why the stuff actually will affect your application and affects the overall platform.
And these are the rules we're following for the Google apps.
That is the idea. I mean, we control our own destiny in the groups that we're in. So certainly these are the rules that the framework behaves. So a lot of these things are like, these are the rules that we developed internally. So, you know, using temporary.
And that was at the question from these other teams. So now they have a written
right.
set of guidelines
to follow. It's certainly easier for them to follow the rules now that we've actually written them down for them, right? Whether they take them on board or, you know, again, weigh the trade-off of, you know, using this particular approach versus using this framework that doesn't use that approach, you know, given their priorities. I can't speak to that. I'm not on that team. But it's certainly the goal. And I think having the information out there in a more consumable form certainly makes it easier for them to actually understand what the rules are as well as hopefully pay attention to them.
Okay. When are you going to record an audiobook?
I think we just did, didn't we?
I mean, more like an author's read of the whole material. I think that especially covering the code snippets would be very entertaining.
Curly brace.
Yeah.
Carriage return. Space, 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 space. No tabs. 4, space. I would love to do that. That would be awesome. Dramatic reading of code.
Yeah.
Real soon now. Yeah. Audiobooks, like when the authors read them, it's always a mixed bag. Like, it's exciting to hear from Stephen King read, you know, the words that he wrote. I love the stories that he tells. On the other hand, he's not an actor. Tina Fey's book, that was a really good author read.
Yeah,
turns out she is an actor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was worth it. Some of the other authors, you know, maybe they could hire somebody else instead. Maybe that's the case with this. Maybe some real actor could actually make a gripping story out of developing for Android. I don't think that person is me.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's not you.
Or, you know, maybe it actually becomes a book. Like, I could actually see doing a book, but again, let's get the information out there, and if time comes up to actually develop into something larger, that could be interesting. Not fun. I was about to say fun. It's not fun. Let's make that very clear. Writing books, not fun.
All right, but for now, people can go and get this stuff, download PDF, put it in their Google Reader or whatever, and on the commute, sit and read.
I hope so. So enjoy.
All right, do you have any parting thoughts? Thank you for joining us today.
Was that to me?
Yeah, I'm treating you as a guest now because this has been all you.
No. If I was actually a real guest for the show, I wouldn't have shown up.
We got to turn this trend.
I don't know. Is it me? Maybe I should shower before these things.
Yeah, maybe I should be the one to approach guests from now on.
Oh, yeah. Why don't we do that? Just tell them that I'm not on the show anymore and then it'll be a surprise when they show up and they'll feel too awkward to actually bail. That's the goal.
All right. And, you know, please download Android Studio 1.3. Preview 1, 2, 3, beta. I'm not sure what's available when the time you hear this, but we would love your feedback.
Get them, play with them, submit feedback, and onward and upward toward it.
All right, next week we have a solid guest for sure.
Sure we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to you then.